Welcome. This is Jean Maroney of Thinking Directions. And today I'm offering a free Ask Me Anything. And I thought I would just seed the ground a little bit before we start. I'm interested in all things psychological. I'm happy to talk about philosophical things too, but my expertise is in psychology, not philosophy. And if you don't know too much about me, I help people who are choosing to make changes or are finding they need to make changes and are trying to manage them in their lives. So a lot of this is about productivity. How do I become more productive? Or how do I, if I'm changing my career, that changes everything. The immediate thing you find when you change your career is that you're not as functional as you were before. You're not as productive. How do you get that ramped up again? Or if you are feeling stalled in your career and you want, or you're retired and you need some kind of purpose in your life, figuring out a purpose and then getting that ramped up so that that motivates you is a big part of the work we do in the Thinking Lab and in the launch. Happiness skills, sometimes what you want, things are going pretty well, but just you'd like there to be more passion in your life or just more, a larger number of ups than downs. And I do think that that's possible, but it requires a lot of self-understanding, and you need to know what goals you're going after, and you need to learn tools for figuring out how to use what you've got now to move forward and get payoffs as you are making changes. And relationships, often that comes under happiness. If you want to change the way you're interacting with people, that takes a lot of self-work. And that's all the kinds of things that we do in the Thinking Lab. So it's open season for questions. We have a couple of people who have already raised their hand. This is your electronic hand. I recommend you do it with the React area where there are two words. It says raise hand. You click on that, your hand goes up and it stays up. If you just have it automatically going up by raising your hand, it will go down in a little while. So I recommend you use the React area. And I'm on for an hour, or I'm willing to stay on longer if there are a lot of questions, but that's the nominal amount of time. So let's get started. Michael, you have a question for me. I think you need to unmute. I muted everyone when we started just for the sound quality.
Mute. There we go. Thank you for letting me be first. I didn't expect that.
All right, well, here you are.
Okay. So, as you know, well-run businesses encourage their employees to try to apply a scientific mindset. And there are some kind of loose frameworks out there, like the Deming Management Cycle, right? Plan, Do, Study, Act, or OODA loop for doing that. Unfortunately, each one of those steps requires detailed mental activity that is not well understood. In fact, our education system actively campaigns against that kind of conceptual approach. So I've been working in this area for years, trying to develop out a more rigorous training and materials to help, especially business to business organizations, more effectively and precisely bring people aboard so they can collaborate with each other around scientific kinds of improvements. If you were in my shoes, what would be the problems you would be seeing that need to be addressed? Psychological, philosophical, application, and then what resources would you make sure you covered to accomplish that goal?
Okay, well, let's take Plan, Do, Act, right?
And
So,
Plan, Do, Study, Act, right?
Plan, Do, Study, Act, okay? That's okay. Let's just take those four as being basic things that people need to do, and let's talk about what's needed for all of those. So, before you can plan, you have to have a shared goal. This is actually a critical thing in relationships, folks. When you want to have cooperation with other people, if you do not have a mutually compatible goal, you are doomed. You are doomed. You will not get the cooperation you want. And you cannot get people to plan things for your company unless you've got them on board with the goals of the company. And that means two things. One is the company actually has to have clear, rational goals. And two, they need to actually care a little bit about the selfish interest of the employees. So that's the first thing I would say before any of this. So I assume you generally agree with me on that, Michael.
Well, yes, but in fact, when I work with people on it, I don't, even though in the industry they say you start with plan, I would start with the study step,
Okay,
which incorporates, I
hold
hope.
on. This is ask me anything. So we're not going to discuss if you have a whole approach for this. You ask me what I would do,
Fair
okay?
enough, yeah.
So I'm going to
Well,
tell you the resources you need for each part of this. I'm just saying this is the critical thing you need if you're before you make a plan, you have to have some kind of alignment on what the goal is.
total, I am definitely in agree with that.
Okay. And that's not trivial. That's actually a communication issue. Not a thinking issue, actually, so much. It's a leadership and a communication issue. Okay. So do this, you know, like I have a course called Do What Matters Most. Actually doing, once you know what it is you need to do, like logically, which is where you say you start, which is I think a good place to start. It's not, this is why you need the goals first, is you actually need to know why you care about doing it, right? If you do not know why it's important to do it, if someone just told you to do it is going to be virtually impossible to do it well, right? Because you need to actually know, again, what the goal is in order to figure out how you do it, and in order and actually take steps that are uncomfortable or difficult that require extra effort. You need to know what's in it for you. Thinking takes work, and the doing is not, if it's rote work, that's not the problem, right? So I interrupted you before, but you are interested in doing, right? The problem with doing is it's not rote work. They have to figure it out. It's creative work. You agree with that?
Yes.
Right. Now, so what do you see as the problem with getting them to do it as the first thing?
The most typical thing we run into is that a group of people, they don't really understand what their problem is. They'll say, well, my problem is they're spending too much time on the wrong accounts, or they need training. Oh, a theory and a solution. I have to train them to look for the facts and the evidence that they don't like, and then go to cause and effect analysis.
Okay, so hold on. So we're back at goals again. So you're talking about talking to managers and trying to figure out what the manager have the managers analyze what's wrong with the employees. Am I getting
Well,
that right?
within the system. I mean, it could be employees, but it's often other things.
Well, okay. So again, you got to start with the goal, and then you've got so why is there not problem analysis around the goal, right? You need to actually have validated the goal. I'm going back to the goal again, Michael.
Well,
You know,
and
they
that's the
said
thing.
if they decide the goal is to get employees to fill out their timesheets right, and the real thing is the employees aren't doing the right thing, that's not going to solve anything, right? So
That's
you need
very
to actually,
true. And
right?
you
So
do need, but in order to get the proper goals, you have to have a common understanding of what the actual causes and effects are that are
okay, hold on.
resulting in the symptoms we have.
First, you need to know what the goal is. Then you need to know what is the problem that's getting in the way of the goal. Right?
And that's
And
very
that,
difficult to decide, to decipher.
right. Well, so here's a tool that I know about. One of my book recommendations is Kepner and Trigot, The New Rational Management. They have a great problem analysis tool in there. And it literally, when you raise the scientific method, it is literally how do you find the root cause of a problem? And it's a good method, and it's something that's been, you know, there are consultants who teach that particular method to businesses. And it's how you find what is the root cause. Now, you have to look at reality for that, but that's actually that process has built into it. What concretely is happening? What are, you know, what did you see happening before? It basically has you do a who, what, when, where, how, why on it. So that's, you know, that's a look at reality is definitely part of that. So, you know, I deal with individuals, right? One of the things that I think is important here is who owns the problem, because that's the person who needs to do the thinking. So if it's the manager whose people are not doing stuff, then that manager is the person who needs to own the problem and actually know that he has to figure out what the problem is. He may get data from people who work for him, but he needs to actually do that strategic thinking. And he needs to do that. So he needs to do that before he starts planning anything. Okay. All right. But then when you get to do is something each individual person needs to do. And there you need to actually be able to do two things. One is you need to see why you should do this. You cannot act without knowing the purpose and the reason for your action. And you need to take action such that you actually get rewarded for your effort. There needs to be a payoff in it. This is like rational goal setting is a course I have in the thinking lab, and it's all about that. Now you had study. Now I take that as you take action and you need to then see, did you get the results that you thought you were going to do get? Right. So you need to monitor. And there, that actually circles you back, right? If you don't get what you thought you were going to get, you need to go back to goal setting. So goal setting is the thing that's missing from the standard process. And I mean, people think the goals are here. The goals are not here. Maybe a very abstract goal is here, but figuring out how to turn an abstract goal into a shorter term result that you can actually see how to get, that is an intellectual process. I teach that in the thinking lab in rational goal setting. And then plan, do, study, act. So I did you was the last one really act? What's the difference between and act?
Well, the study is identifying and articulating the facts, what really happened. The act is also called adjust. It's
Adjust.
in my view, it is figuring out what are the causes and effects so that you can take an action that might create improvement.
Right. Well, that's it. So this is right. So that's basically things didn't go the way you thought they were going to go. You need to then look again for the root cause.
Right.
So that's a short version of my answer for you, Michael. I mean, I think that the managers need these tools, and if they have anybody who has any discretionary power in the company, those people need these tools too. Everybody who is responsible for figuring this out needs to do this.
Yeah,
So how's that for a
inevitably,
short answer for your question?
that's a good short answer, but inevitably the bottleneck ends up being how do we get those executives to realize that they need to support this, that this is important, and that's hard.
Well, so do the managers want the company to make money? Are the managers on board with the goals of the company? It's all about the goals. If you get them behind the goals, if you get them seeing that the company's goals are in alignment with their goals, the company's goals are rational, that it's in fact possible to do this, then you can get people inspired. But that's how you get people inspired. That's what I think the purpose of marketing is to help people see how what you have to offer them is in fact going to be of selfish value to them. And so that's a communication question. Good for
Thank you.
now?
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right. Andrew, you have a question?
Hi.
Hi.
I don't want to go into a huge setting of the context, but what I'm looking at, I'm thinking of doing the launch.
Great.
I would like to be self-employed.
Great.
I'm thinking of being a life coach.
Great.
The problem is, my whole life I have not been a very good self-starter. And I've been in the thinking lab for, what, a year and a half now?
Okay.
And I can't even motivate myself to do thinking on paper.
Okay. Well, so a couple things. One, so this is, let me tell you something, Andrew. The fact that you have a goal that you want to be self-employed and be a life coach is in fact the thing that is going to motivate you to learn some of these things that are going to turn you into a self-starter. And it is true to have a successful coaching business, you do need to be a self-starter in at least some respects. Or, I mean, even if you work for someone else as a coach, you need to be a self-starter because you will basically be running your own stuff, right? Even you understand what I'm saying. So let me tell you how launch could help with this because I think that's part of what your question is. And I do, for those who don't know, the Thinking Lab is essentially a self-study program. I forget what the number is. I mean, we keep adding courses. There are like 20 self-study courses available in the Thinking Lab. And you go through the courses and they have various exercises and you can do them while you're doing them. But of course, the real benefit is to then use them like thinking on paper. You learn it in a couple of different classes, then actually use it when some issue comes up. So the idea is that you learn the tactics in the courses and then you apply them in your life. And there are various Q&As and things and coaching sessions where you can get some help from me. Launch is a much more has a lot more support involved for that. And the support in launch is that there are two coaching calls a week and there's daily thought work. And so what we do in launch is we actually encourage you to do very specific daily thought work every day in respect to your goal. So like your goal might be to get to a point where you can actually start a coaching business, right? And you can probably, I mean, you probably off the top of your head, tell me the first three or four things that you need to do in order to make this transition without any idea about how you're going to do it. But just logically, what are like three things you need to do to start a coaching business?
Hire an accountant, learn how to coach.
Learn how to coach. Okay. I think that's before an accountant, by the way, just to be clear. Okay. What else?
Set a schedule, like a
Okay.
work schedule.
Get on a work schedule, learn how to coach, try out. Also, you probably might want to try out coaching people, see if you actually like it. Right? So I would say hire an accountant is much later. Right? This is something, the first three things you could do on the side without changing how you're making money right now. And that, so that's three things. So maybe some combination of those are the things you think you should do during the 8 weeks. And you may not be able to do them completely, but you could get started on them. Let's just stipulate, right? Well, now you're going to predict, right? If you're going to predict, you're going to have trouble doing that on September, so thinking day is September 2nd. September 3rd, you're going to have trouble getting started. Are you predicting that?
That would be not a stretch, yes.
Not a stretch. Okay. Well, so the email that you get in your inbox on September 3rd, I think I have the dates right. Pretty sure the first is a Sunday and the second is the Labor Day, is actually going to be about, well, how are you going to do this work today? And the idea is you read that email and you try to answer those questions. Now, I recommend you do it as thinking on paper. I recommend you spend like 15 minutes a day doing thinking on paper. Everybody the first week has trouble getting on to the routine. And, you know, so there's various things to think about to get you to try to do it, right? Then there's a coaching call on Thursday. The thinking day is Monday. Thursday is the first coaching call. If you haven't been able to do it, then the suggestion is show up at the coaching call and explain your exact problems. Now, most of the coaching calls I do, a couple of them during the launch, Lynn Zinser will do. But you come and you'd be amazed. There's always a concrete reason. When you don't do something, there is always a very concrete reason why you didn't do it. And the coaching calls are frequent enough that you will remember why you didn't do this yesterday or why you didn't do it today. And by talking about that concrete, you need to understand the concrete things standing in your way because your motivation is different from everybody else's motivation on earth. And the person who needs to be motivated to take this action is you. And you are the only person who can figure out, you've got obviously this vision of this, you know, a self-employed running a coaching business, which is an exciting vision. But you're the only person who can figure out, well, how do I start taking steps for that given my existing motivation, which is based on every past choice and action you've taken? And there is a way to get started, but you need to pick something that you can do and pick something that actually, and pick it in such a way that you are, you know, mildly interested or excited to do it, right? Something between those. So you're actually willing to go over the hump and do it. And to some extent, you need some of the tools in the thinking lab. Like I take it you've been through Do What Matters Most. Am I correct about that, Andrew?
I've been through most of it, yes.
Okay, great. So you know,
Actually practicing is not, but I've seen the videos.
but you've got the ideas, right? So you know there's actually a tool if you're really feeling resistance and you're absolutely certain you should be doing this. You know that there's a tool there. Like the tool for that is, in effect, try for a few minutes, even though it's really uncomfortable, and see if you can get over the hump. And so part of what will happen in the coaching calls is we'll remind you of the tool and you'll get yourself a little more excited. Okay, I'm going to really try that next time and you're going to be able to catch it better. And this is how people actually use the coaching calls and the daily thought work to get the ball rolling. And what you will find, and what everybody who really participates in launch gets some momentum going. And it's way easier. Once you get a little momentum going, you get on a roll, then you can do the next thing and the next thing. And there will be ups and downs, but that's why there are two coaching calls a week. The other thing that I am, and it's also why I kind of left this out. The first thing we do in launch is we vet the goal and make sure that you've got a kind of realistic idea of what you can get done, and that you've got a plan that at least passes the laugh test for how it is that you could do it. You know, in principle, you could do it. You're worried you might not be motivated, but that's what we'll solve during the launch. And so the real thing that comes out of launch, not everybody gets their major goal done, but I think everybody who puts in the time and comes to the coaching calls actually gets a lot of momentum and actually sees, aha, I can get this moving, and I can actually they achieve a major goal, which is that they get the project moving and they figure out how to get it going and they get the right thing in their target, even if they don't get the exact goal that they started with at the beginning of launch. Does that make sense?
It does.
Now that's a real pitch for it. So what's your question or concern? See if I can answer a question without a pitch.
My main thing was, is it actually, can I find something I can work on for the 8 weeks that would justify trying it out?
Yeah, well, if you have that goal, absolutely. There's definitely things you can do. I mean, that's the first thing. You're already in the thinking lab, Andrew, right?
Yes.
So if you're already in the thinking lab, you have access to some of the critical launch materials. If you go to the launch tab in the thinking lab, there is a document called How to Define an Initiative. And I would recommend you start looking at that and trying to work through that document. That's really the first thing we do in launch, and that's what we talk about on Thinking Day. There's actually a Q&A next Tuesday in the thinking lab where you could, if you tried it and you had trouble, you could actually get help with it next Tuesday in the thinking lab before even signing up for launch. So that's what I would recommend that you do. And I guarantee that's the big thing that I do in launch so that people really achieve something. No, there are two big things. One is I help them get to set the goal right. I mean, in the thinking lab, as I mentioned to Michael, there's a whole class on rational goal setting about how to really set goals. What I do in launch is I coach people to be able to figure out by talking with them, we figure out a goal that is in fact motivating, that they actually think is doable, and we get something that they can work on where they can actually see results in the shorter term. And so we use coaching so you don't have to figure it all out yourself. I help you figure it out. Good.
Good.
All right, great. Well, I look forward to talking with you next week in the Q&A, even if you don't join launch. How about that?
Great.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Andrew. Lara, you have a question? Is it Lara or Lara?
Laura, yeah, great to
Lara.
see you, Jean. Thank you.
Yes,
Yeah,
yes.
thanks. Yeah, my question is, do you think that objective self-awareness is possible? And if so, how do you achieve it?
I absolutely think it's possible. So let's make sure we're talking about the same thing. So the term I usually use is self-understanding. So if you can be aware of, in effect, why you're feeling what you're feeling and why you're doing what you're doing, which I think you can absolutely be aware of, that's what I would call objective self-awareness. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about?
It is, yes.
And where does this come up as an issue for you?
I
Like,
think.
or why is the question come up? I'm not asking for a personal thing, but how does this question come up? Because I don't think I've gotten to the bottom of it yet.
Got it. I think it's a deeper philosophical question, but it shows up in my life as being someone who continually wants to grow. And sometimes I'm concerned that my emotions about myself are clouding my objective judgment about where I can improve, what my strengths and weaknesses are. So I sometimes worry I'm lacking that objective self-awareness.
Oh, okay. So this is a learnable skill. So that's what I want to tell you is this is something you actually need to work for, and it's actually part of growth. As I told Andrew, your motivation is what causes your emotions, and your motivation is 100% individual. It is completely based on things that happened to you from zero to now. And things that choices you made. So experiences you had, choices you made, actions you took. Those are all the things that have actually created your values, That's what has created the knowledge you have. If you have some mistaken beliefs, that's what's created them. If you have some old baggage, that's what's created them. If you have skills, that's what's created them. If you don't have skills, that's what hasn't created them. So I think of self-understanding as really knowing your own knowledge, your own values, your own skills, and also where you're ignorant or a little mixed up, where you have some old baggage, and where, gee, I haven't developed that skill yet. And this is something that you get by actually setting a goal. Like you have some, what would be an example of something that you would want to improve, where there's a goal that would require self-improvement that you have?
I think one of them would be communicating more effectively. So I think that's challenging because sometimes I think I'm communicating a certain way and then I get feedback from somebody else that I haven't come across the way I think I am. So there's that disconnect that makes me question my self-awareness.
Right. And is this primarily because you're looking for better connection with people, or you actually want to cooperate more effectively, or you just want to explain your ideas better? Which of those big three is the one that is most interest to you in the in that communication?
I think effective collaboration in this specific
Okay.
context.
Right. So you have some mutual goal. So this is related to Michael's question. You have some mutual goal. And you think you're talking about what you're doing for it and what they should be doing for it and how that's going to go. And somehow they get the wrong idea. And as a result, you don't go in the same direction. Is that what I'm hearing? Right. Okay, great. So this is also a learnable skill. I don't really want this to be a pitch fest, but I do want to have people know about resources that are available. There's another program that I wasn't planning to advertise here, which is called it's called Better Relationships. It's my 4-day communication intensive. How to have rational conversations on emotionally charged topics was the previous name, but it's a 4-day thing in November, and there are only two slots left at this point. But the thing that turns out to be critical in communication with another person is the real-time part of this, in that you need there are three parts. And I don't want this to be overwhelming, but I just want to explain what it is. There are three parts to really effective communication. One is you need to really notice if you have any, you need to know why you're talking to them, and you need to notice if you have any concerns at the back of your mind, right? If you're having niggling concerns, or if they're irritating you, or if you're worried about something, if you have any emotions that are at all in conflict with the communication that you're trying to make, that is actually work that you need to do for yourself, because it means that you're not 100% aligned around what you're trying to do here. So, like, this can happen. Like, for example, it's very important, like with a coworker, it's very important that it be a mutually respectful relationship. And yet, if you're irritated, or you're trying to just get them to do what you want them to do, that even though consciously you're thinking, okay, I'm doing this in a respectful way, I'm trying to do this, the fact that you have emotions that are in the other direction means that they will actually read that, and that will mess up the communication at that moment. And so part of what you need for great communication is you need to be able to introspect your own emotions right now and ground yourself, and you need to know and be 100% behind. Okay, like, for example, one of the things that people sometimes, there are two basic things you wind up doing in this situation. One is you say, okay, I'm a little nervous, I want to be respectful. Okay, the most important thing is I connect with this guy and make sure I know that we've got an open wavelength. And then what you would do is you'd switch to connection, and you would actually try to really listen. That would be one of the things that you would do. And the other thing that you might do is you might say, no, I mean, I really need to be heard about this, and I really want to express this, and I want to make sure I express this in the most non-defensive, rational way. So let me focus on values and requests. So let me tell you, so I'm really needing more clarity here. Would you mind repeating that? Or I'm really wanting to make sure that we're in alignment and that we're doing the same thing. Can we just, would it be okay if we both said what we thought was going to happen here? Whatever. That would be an example of your trying to meet your needs. The other would be, and that's called self-expression, and doing that in a way that doesn't trigger the other person is a skill. And then the third thing is listening to the other person. There are a lot of classes on active listening. The one that's in my communication intensive is more focused on really trying to read in. You partly read their emotions, and you partly, if they're getting irritated with you, you want to understand what that is, right? Or if they're being impatient, or if they're being, they say something that's a total non sequitur. You know what I mean? Like you thought, it's like, why are they saying that? Then you want to be able to draw them out. And again, draw them out in a way that is not going to push their buttons. And I'll tell you, the trick to all of this is thinking in terms of deep values. These are things like clarity, direction, efficacy, connection, communication, cooperation, the integrity, honesty, health. You know, there, I have a list of deep rational values that if you search deep rational values on my site, you'll see there's a FAQ on what are deep rational values. And that changes the conversation. And those are things that if you ask someone if they're after clear more clarity, no one gets offended. If you say, "Are you not paying attention?" they get offended, right? You know what I mean? And so there's art to being able to translate something that occurs to you in a way that could easily push their buttons into something that would be actually draw them out and actually get them on the same page. So I don't know. I'm not sure this is exactly what you were looking for. But so the thing you said, the way you presented was there are certain things where I see I want to grow. And then I don't know if I'm being objective about it. And so, something like this, because this is the case you brought up, there is information about how you develop better skill about that. And that's one thing that I would say is that whatever you want to develop better skill at, typically there are people who understand that and can actually tell you. The thing I would look for is look for whether they explain it in a completely rational way. That's what you want. And there, but I don't think this has actually gotten at your real issue. So let me stop talking for a second.
Okay, I think that was very that was I think that was clarifying and helpful for additional context. So I'll mull that over. I think my still remaining question is about how to be objective about my emotions, and
Okay.
if that's even possible, because I'm wondering if emotions are inherently subjective. So that's the area of self-awareness I'm wondering how to be objective about.
Great. So you need a skill at introspection. And so I'll tell you, there are three parts to introspection. The first part is what am I feeling and why? And there you just need to know the names of the emotions. And this is, I have a tactic called Introspection 101 and a COPE tactic called Introspection Training Wheels, where I actually give you a list of 50 feelings. 50 positive, 50 negative. And when you're feeling in some complicated situation, you go through the list and you check off each one that you're feeling. And then the second part is why do I feel it? And for that, you need to know the families, the eight basic families of emotions. This is my categorization. And the basic families are anger and gratitude, fear and relief, despair and hope, guilt and pride, frustration and confidence, love and indifference, joy and grief, desire and aversion. And that's that. This is also you can find this if you look in the Thinking Direction Starter Kit, which is for free, available on the website. It's under the freebie tab. There's actually an introduction to this that actually has this list. If you know the basic family, like if you feel wistful, that's a little bit sad and a little bit hopeless. Okay. The basic meaning of sadness is I have lost a value. The basic meaning of hopeless or despair is the category for that is value, my values are not possible. If you notice, oh, wistful, well, that's a little bit sadness and a little bit hopelessness or a little bit despair. You totally know what it is. That feeling that you name, if you have the concept for the feeling and you say, oh, I'm feeling that, all you need to know is you need to know what is the family and you can say why you're feeling it. Then that's abstractly. Then you say, well, why am I feeling that right now? And that is a pretty easy step when you have the abstraction. It's a pretty easy step. So, like, give me an example of something you might feel, name the feeling, and we'll do it right now for just one feeling.
Okay, I'll kind of piggyback off your example, but I think, for instance, there might be a time when I am feeling hopeless, for instance, about a job search.
Yes,
But then
okay.
there's another part of me that thinks it's not objective to feel hopeless because it's just an uncertain experience, and my feeling is not necessarily reality. I have to keep persisting. So that's how I'm wondering how if my feeling maps to reality or not.
Okay, so the feeling, what the feeling tells you is not about reality. What it tells you is about all your past choices and actions and experiences. And so if you're feeling despair, now you could imagine, why might you feel hopeless? Why might you feel hopeless? Now, presumably you've put in a bunch of time and you haven't gotten a result yet. Is that right? So you're worried that you're going to put in more effort and it's not going to pay off.
Right.
Now that is, if you have a good reason to expect that your additional effort is going to pay off, then you could say, okay, hopelessness, you're being a little silly here because this does take more than I've only put my resume up for 24 hours. It's really not reasonable to expect in 24 hours I'm going to get a job. Now, if you've been doing it for 6 months and you haven't gotten any leads, then you could say, hey, hopelessness, yeah, I can really see why you're feeling hopeless here. I wonder if I need to think about doing this a different way because, my emotions are telling me I'm not getting enough payoff for what I've been doing, and I've been putting in a lot of effort. Or they might tell you, gee, you might look at the same, because it depends on your circumstances. This is why I say motivation is 100% individual. Suppose it was you're feeling hopeless, and it's like Andrew was saying, gee, I said I was going to do this, this, and this, and I haven't actually done any of those things. Of course, I'm not getting a job because I haven't put in the effort. How am I going to put in the effort? So, I think the right thing to think about emotions is this is a value issue coming up from your subconscious data banks that's saying, hey, Laura, hey, this doesn't seem to be computing here if it's in contradiction to what you think is the logical thing. And the thing to do with that is to go look at it and really understand. And I think the third step I think is important in introspection is naming what is the fundamental rational value that is behind that emotion. I think dismissing emotions is always wrong. But like in this case, if you were feeling a little bit hopeless about a job search, you might say, well, what I really want is efficacy at this. Or what I really want is timeliness about this. Those are both on my list of deep rational values. And you say, yeah, I really want that. This has been going on a long time. Or it might be, I don't know, but that's the third step I would say is, what's the deep value here? There's always a deep value, whatever emotion you have, it's always tied to a deep value. And that's part of how you can honor your emotions. Now you may decide, actually, okay, part of me is in a real hurry. Part of me really wants this done in a timely fashion. And you know what? I really think the logical thing to do here is to put in a little more effort in looking here, there, and the other place and giving it some more time. But if you have named it at that level, it calms down the emotions and you no longer in conflict. And you also are absolutely certain you are doing the rational thing. Because the thing to remember is that stuff that comes from your subconscious, that's the same data bank where all your great ideas come from. And an emotion is just it's a little less clear idea that's somehow tied to something that is important to you. And so you want to turn that, make it clear, and then sometimes it'll be irrelevant. Sometimes it will actually lead to a big aha, but always it will clarify your values, your priorities, what matters to you. And that's how you get that kind of objective self-awareness. The more you do that introspection, the more you know why you're feeling what you're feeling, and the faster it is to make those integrations, and the easier it is to align your values so that you are, unleashed and moving forward toward whatever you want.
Well, thank you. That was very powerful and clarifying and comprehensive. So thank you for answering my question.
You are very welcome. And I'll just make a little pitch. This is part of the Thinking Lab. Do What Matters Most has introspection training wheels, Unit 3. So,
Okay, I wrote it down. Thank you. I'll
okay,
take a peek.
great.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, great. All right, terrific. And I'm just going to say, for when I have an open event like this, I basically stay on till I answer all the questions. So I see four questions. If some of you can't go until after 1 p.m., please put it in the chat and I'll put you to the top. But I'm just going to go in the order the hands raised came up. So, David, you're up next. What's your
All right,
question?
awesome. So I can't actually wait until like a little later, so I'm fine to let someone else who has, a more tight time budget to go ahead.
Okay, well, I don't see anyone requesting that, so why don't we take your question?
Okay. So I think that I have a fear of being motivated by fear, or I think I've made a threat out of the threat orientation.
All
And
right. Yay,
I think,
David.
yeah, yay me. And I think that ultimately reduces to like a fear of feelings. But here's like the rationale, which is that experiencing threat-based emotions puts my mind in a dysfunctional cognitive state. And it's like, well, if self-esteem is mind esteem, and my mind is in a dysfunctional state, and I don't know how to like deal with that, then how can I call in like a self-esteem context to get out of that? And
Okay, let me give you a little bit of answer right away so you don't get into a dysfunctional state right now.
sure.
Is that okay?
That is fine.
I think you just joined the Thinking Hat Lab a little while ago, is that right?
I did, yes.
Yes, okay. I'm pretty sure I knew what David I was talking to. Okay. So, you've taken in a lot of material and it's coming up and starting to work against itself. So, I'm really glad you asked a question. So let me explain what a dysfunctional state is to people who aren't familiar with the things that I've said. I make a distinction between emotions, which are anger, fear, gratitude, confidence, love, desire, which are conceptually based in effect. There is some kind of an expectation of pleasure or pain built into them. And so they all have an evaluation built into them. And so an emotion always has an underlying evaluation. That's why you can memorize the eight basic families of emotions and you know what the evaluation is for each one of them. And you can introspect in that way. Those emotions are they're the kind of affect we are most familiar with, but there is a lot of other affect, which I would call mind-body states. And so this includes things like hunger. It includes things like, or the feeling you have when you're full, that kind of pleasurable feeling of satiation. It also includes mental states. So, like overload versus there's a kind of mental flow that you have when you have just enough, the right amount of information and everything comes in and you can handle it as it comes. There's kind of a state of flow versus when you're overloaded, or clear versus confused. Or conflict is another, negative state. And these negative cognitive states I call dysfunctional states. And to some extent, some of the body states can be dysfunctional. Like if you're really tired, you can't concentrate, you can't do stuff. You need to go take a rest, right? Or if you're in a lot of pain, it can be you actually can be in a state where you actually can't think. The good news about mind body states is that they tell you exactly what the problem is. Like confusion and is a type of overload. If you're overloaded, what's the problem, David? Tell me what overload is telling you.
Overload is telling me that I need more crow space.
No, that's not what it's telling you. You don't get more.
What?
That's trying to fight reality. You only have the crow space you have. It's telling you
Oh.
you're trying to fit more things in your crow than fit.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So what should
Yes,
you
it
do?
makes sense.
You should put fewer things in your crow. Right? You don't
That
sit and
makes
wait
sense,
for a
yeah.
bigger crow. You say, okay, this is too many. I better break this down. Now, there are 10 ways to break something down. The simplest way is pick one and think about that. Or like the basic solution overload. This is in Tap Your Own Brilliance, which is another class in the Thinking Lab. Is list, group, choose. So there are too many things in your head. So what do? You make a list. Then you look at the list and say, well, which are the most important ones? Or you group it into things and you say, okay, which of these am I going to look at first? And you pick, and you literally reduce the number of things you're looking at. And so if you're overloaded, that is a dysfunctional state. It's very helpful to realize it's a dysfunctional state. That means you need to reduce the load. You need to reduce it right now. This is one of the reasons I'm such an advocate of thinking on paper, folks. Thinking on paper, if you're feeling overloaded at all, thinking on paper actually reduces the load because you get the ideas out of your head and onto paper. And that, it's like expressing them. They lose their hold, and you can write down a whole lot more thoughts than you can keep in your head. You can write down on paper. Let me just pause there for a second, David. Does that help a little bit with your question?
It does help me a little bit, and I appreciate the fact that you brought up accepting facts in regard to the whole overload, because I've found that that is I think like the first step to get to a place of like being willing to do when it comes to addressing overload. Would
Yes,
you
well, yes, this is really important. One of the reasons I make a point about it being a dysfunctional state is to say, oh, okay, I better not do that, right? Overload, you're staying in overload is a choice.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So here's a related question then.
Yes.
What I am in the thinking lab for is that I compete at a particular video game, and I want to improve my mental game at doing that. And so I've been, very frequently like on the spot, quote unquote, where I'm playing someone and people are watching and there's like pressure and all that stuff. And so I've experienced dealing with that. I would refer to that state of being, under pressure, kind of nervous or whatever, as being a form of overload. Is that accurate?
Yes, I agree with that. And
Okay,
so let me get okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say that right now, being on this call, I do feel some of that. So right
Yeah.
now, I'm kind of in a little bit of a nervous-ish, you could say, I guess you could say overloaded state. And so you're saying, oh, David, you have a choice right now to like deal with that. And I'm like, okay, well, should I continue listening to Jean and try to figure out what she's saying, even though I'm a bit overloaded, or should I like tune her out and try to, get a hold of my to reduce my overload
Okay,
by
great.
reducing the, yeah, you know what I'm trying
Fantastic.
to say.
So I do know what you're trying to say and what you've actually done. So let me tell everyone a second way of dealing with overload. You can tell so this is what you can do in conversation if you're overloaded or otherwise confused or something. You can say, "Hey, other person, I'm a little bit overloaded or confused. So can I, is all right if I just cord on for you for a second and just tell you everything that's on my mind and let's see if we can work through this together and move forward. And do you feel less overloaded having told me all of that, David? Less pressure?
I do,
Yes.
but now
Okay.
I'm kind of like, what's Jean gonna do with this now?
Yes,
I'm ready
right.
to
So,
listen to her.
okay, great. Right. So part of the thing here is that what you actually did right there was in fact respect your mental needs. And so now I'm going to say something separate. This is the difference between a thinking skill and a performance skill or communication skill. And I do think communication is real time and there are people watching and they're going to be, there's a person you're talking to, right? And so it is more difficult to handle emotions in real time. The general thing that I recommend you do, like generally, I've recommended this for a long time, is get good at figuring it out at your desk, right? So that if you can handle pressure when you're at your desk, if you can handle emotions, like something happened yesterday when you were gaming and you got kind of flummoxed, you go analyze that in hindsight, you see what was going on, you kind of put it to bed, that will flummox you less the next time. That's one thing that I recommend. The other thing, I want to go back to the communication skills that I was talking with, and now I've forgotten. I think it was actually Michael I was talking with about. If you really want to, in real time, be able to deal with stuff coming at you, what you need is you need real time ability to manage your emotions. And I do think that all the work at your desk helps with that. But I think the real, dealing with it on your feet, you learn in the communication intensive that I run. It's nonviolent communication is the best methodology that we teach there. Only we teach it from my perspective. And the critical thing that helps you, so you might want to listen if you haven't listened yet to the Introduction to Rationally Connected Conversations, which is in the Thinking Lab, David. You might want to listen to that because the real critical thing you do in these cases is you figure out the big value at stake for you. So like give me a case where someone is saying something to you, like let's try to do it about a game because I think that'll be less pressure than trying to talk about right now. But think about a game where you were feeling pressure and you tell me what you wanted in that moment, just in whatever words make sense.
Okay, well, I will say that actually today I listened to the introduction to that class in the Thinking Lab, so I get what you're referring to.
Okay.
So in like the game itself, communication is an interesting word to use because like we're not talking for the most part, or not really at all. We're like we're playing. I guess there are sometimes people watching.
Right, forget about communication for a second. Tell me what was causing the pressure.
It's different for different people.
So give,
Some
no,
people.
you. So David, the issue is I want an example where you felt pressure and it was messing you up. That's what I want.
Okay. So on Tuesday, there is a player who is higher ranked than I am, and he uses my character as like a secondary character as opposed to a main one. But even so, he's a better player than I am, and he's very, let's just say, sarcastic and not a very easily relatable person too. And as a consequence, I felt very self-conscious in the way that I played. And so, because this particular video game is very fast, it relies on your subconscious, evaluations to make
Hold
decisions
on,
very
hold
quickly.
on. Okay, forget about that for a second. Let's get to your emotions here. So he's sarcastic. What's exactly going on? You're feeling self-conscious, meaning what? Meaning you're feeling like he's going to say something. What is the meaning of you're feeling self-conscious?
I don't think he was going to say something to say, hey, you're gonna, you're really bad or whatever, and you should feel bad. But there might be like the fear of that, I want his approval. And if he
Okay,
did say that, then it'd be
hold on,
very.
hold on. This is not a hypothetical, okay? What we're trying to figure out is what was actually going through your mind when you were feeling self-conscious. Was it, I'm not as good as him? Was it, he's going to say something? Was it, that's what you need to know. You need to know what thoughts were underlying that self-conscious, that what you're calling self-consciousness, because they were all distracting you from the game, right? They were all taking up pro space. And what the hell are they? So can you gather out what you think they were?
I can try. You can interrupt me
Yeah.
if you think I'm not getting
Blather
at it.
them out. Okay.
I want to play well against him because he, being a better player, will offer me good experience to improve. But if I'm playing badly, then I'm not really able to improve playing at, a better at my best. It's just like, oh, I'm distracted and I need to learn to not be distracted, and I can't benefit from playing with them, even though that was my intention, because I'm so distracted.
Great, fantastic. So this is a perfect example of what you opened with, which is your fear of fear or your fear of a threat orientation, actually getting in the way of dealing with it. Right. Perfect example of this, right? Because, oh my God, I'm being distracted by thinking about him, and that if I'm thinking about him and that's distracting me from actually doing what I want to do, and oh my God, oh, and that thought's distracting too. And look at this, here's another distracting thought. It's like just it's like it's a vicious cycle that gets going as soon as you get it, right? So let's name so and we've got the other part of it, which is you think you could learn from it. So there's part of you that's excited. So part of you is like, ah, and self-conscious. And part of you is like, oh, good, I get to play this guy because I'm gonna learn something and I'm gonna get better. Is that right? You really do have conflicting emotions here. And let's name the deep rational value for the excitement. Let's see if we can name what that is. I think I know what it is, but I'm wondering if you, off the top of your head, what do you think that excitement is really about? Something really completely rational.
Efficacy?
Yeah, efficacy, growth, mastery, something in that general area. Absolutely, totally rational. What about the distraction? Now, that's a threat, right? That's, you're afraid of the distraction. What is it that you're really wanting? Can we name the positive that you're really wanting that the distraction is threatening?
Skillful play.
Well, that's we need to go to a deep rational value. We need to go more abstract because otherwise you're going to get caught in, oh no, I'm not being skillful. It's not skillful play. What, how do I do that? I don't know how to do that right now. So we need to go abstract to something you can get at. I'm going to give you a hint. Do you have by any chance the list of deep rational values near you?
I can pull them up,
Let me see if I can pull
but
it.
I've made some effort to memorize them, so like I get what's on the list from memory.
So
There's like clarity, direction, efficacy, health, communication, connection, rationality. I think there's one more, but I forget what it
I'm pretty
is.
sure that's
Let me pull it up.
the eight of them. So I'll
Okay.
tell you, it's in the clarity category, what I'm pretty sure you're wanting. And it's
Oh,
the
okay.
opposite of distraction. What's the opposite of distraction? Do you know any idea?
Focus, clarity.
Focus, concentration is the one I was thinking of.
Oh, okay, I see.
So you're really
Interesting.
wanting both mastery and concentration. That's what you're really wanting in that moment. Concentration,
Right.
mastery. Well, so then if you know that, then you can say, okay, to hell with all those thoughts, I am going to concentrate on what I can learn here. And you can actually do both. This is very often the case that you can actually get everything you want once you turn it all into values. This is something that is way easier to do at your desk or talking to me the next, 2 days later. But this is what the goal is, to be able to do that in real time. And you say, okay, what, Matt, and the analogy, so it's not actual communication. I agree with you, but communication is the general area where you learn this skill because you actually need to do it in real time. Whereas thinking, the solution for thinking is to just go do it at your desk. The only time you really need to think on your feet is when you're in conversation with another person. And thinking, you can always do at your desk and you can slow it down and you can, actually take a couple minutes to figure out what that silly emotion was and what do you really want to hear, and then say, okay, well, that makes perfect sense that I want concentration. Well, concentration is something. You have volitional control over your attention, so you can say attention. So you can say, okay, what can I pay attention to that is going to really help me just not focus on that other stuff? Ah, what can I learn? That's what I really want here. Let's focus on that. And but this
Okay.
is something, and like in a conversation, like in what Laura was talking about, like if the issue was a conversation with another person and they were looking impatient or something like that. If you can in real time say, okay, I really want this to work. I really want to have clear communication here. I'm just going to open up and I'm going to try to really understand what's going on. I'm just going to try to understand. That could put her in a position where she could draw out the other person without getting caught up in the other stuff. So that's where the analogy.
Okay.
Does that make sense? And it's a
It
skill.
does
It's
make
a
sense,
learnable
though.
skill. Total learnable skill. It's what I find with this skill is that you get good at it in areas where you can practice it. Like I still have some trouble in doing the RCC. Like when someone there are certain situations where I have trouble, but I've gotten very good at it. For example, in coaching, I'm good at it. I can do it. And you will eventually get good at this kind of thing when you're playing your computer game.
Okay, well, it's not a computer game, it's a console game, but that's okay.
A console game, excuse me. Okay.
Yeah, which is why, we meet up in real life to play. So there's that
Oh,
aspect
great.
to it.
Fantastic. Oh, so there's a real person there, right? Okay. So that's, really is, you really are on your feet and it's social. It is a social situation. That's very
It is,
interesting.
yeah. Sorry,
All
I didn't
right.
clarify.
Yeah, that's great. I didn't actually know about that. So is that good for now, David?
It is almost good for now. I have one question, which is I'm curious why concentration is in clarity and not efficacy, because I would think concentration is efficaciousness of the mind to the task.
Well, you gotta pick a lane for this, but the critical thing with what you get with concentration is you get more attention on the object, and the main thing that gets you is clarity. So I
Okay.
definitely think that's why I put it in that category. let me give a one-line answer to your original opening thing about being fear, feeling fear of fear and threatened by the threat orientation. Here's the one-line response to that. Take from the thinking lab that this is, by changing your attention, you can shift out of the threat orientation. You
Is that the
have the choice.
CTFAR model?
Excuse me? That's
Is that
one way
the
to describe it.
essence?
That's for vicious and virtuous cycles, which is part of it, but actually deep rational values. The way you shift from a threat to a value orientation is by naming the deep rational value at stake. That's how you shift it. Just that's the simple way you shift to a value orientation. It is under your volitional control. It can be done. So
All
that's
right,
the thing.
I'll internalize that.
Okay, great. And develop the skills, learnable skill. Great. All right, David.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you, Jean.
You're welcome. And I think Randy is up next. And I just want to remind, we've got two more hands up. And if you're in a hurry, you need to put something in the chat. No one has put anything in the chat, so. Sydney says she needs to leave at 1:20. Randy, are you in a hurry? Is it okay if we go to Sydney? He says it's okay. So Sydney, why don't you ask your question?
Awesome. Thanks, Randy. So I just have a question. I work with neurodivergent young adults with life coaching. So one of my big questions is what I struggle the most with supporting them with is when they have instant gratification, especially in today's society with phones, video games, and all those things where we go through like executive functioning, problem solving, self-awareness, all those things to kind of support them and see how maybe those items are causing impact on their goals, things that they've set for their goals. But I was just more curious how you would go about that because I think everything I try typically does come up short, and I'm just kind of looking for more guidance in that area.
Okay, great. So this is, I mean, there is a challenge here, right? That there is a choice to go long range versus short range. And the instant gratification has quite a bit of oomph to it, right? That they can see if I just do this, I'm going to get a shot of pleasure. It'll be great. And I think that there's the thing that I found most helpful for myself. So, like for me, the thing that I've had to deal with this personally is an emotional eating. Fortunately, I haven't had like a huge problem with this. But that is, you know, for me, that's the place where I've had to really deal with impulse control. And that's really what you're talking about here is impulse control. And the thing that helped me with this was to really understand that part of the reason that pull is so intense is that pull is it's always some kind of a short-term benefit, like the cookie gives you a sweet, or the, you know, the text gives you some kind of social interaction or something, right? Part of the reason that has such a pull is that in the past you've done this to avoid something unpleasant. And so there's a double impulse there. One is to avoid the thing that's unpleasant. So, I mean, I have literally, I've had to learn to notice that I can teleport out of my desk to the refrigerator when thinking gets hard, and I need to go back to the desk and find out, well, what is hard about that? And so part of what I think can help is to figure out what is the negative that just happened that you are avoiding by going after this impulse. And there's always a negative there. And getting clearer on that negative and realizing, gee, I totally understand why this impulse is so strong. That in itself helps with impulse control. But then also really knowing what that negative is and wanting to do something about it and seeing that if I do something about that negative, that is going to be so much better than having a cookie. And figuring out what that negative is the critical thing. Now, I'm curious. I mean, you're working with relatively, how old are the kids are that you're working with?
I do over 18, so I have some clients that are even around 50 to 60.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And what I've noticed most of the time, and you know, every situation is going to be different, but what I've noticed most of the time is that it's a safe place as well. So it's somewhere they're comfortable with, especially after going a full day, maybe at work in a neurotypical environment where they feel like they have to kind of social fake. Like that's exhausting. So then
Yes.
they come back, they find their safe place. But yeah, so I was just kind of curious.
So then two things. One is really helpful if they can make it less exhausting at work, right? So that one thing will definitely help. The other thing I would say is I think I mean this is, I literally, well, okay, forget about me. I actually think finding other better ways to get that relief is also
Replacements.
is also very important because there are and like for example, I'm just going to give an example. One of the things I teach is a 3-minute walk. I actually just wrote about this a couple of weeks ago. Walking for 3 minutes is like energizing, and you feel better if you do it. And if you can just say, okay, well, I'm just going to substitute a 3-minute walk for this and think about, well, what's on my mind and whatever, and is there an issue that I need to deal with? That can be extremely helpful. And it's not, it's not the critical thing here, I think, is to find something that is not painful as the alternative, because the problem with a really strong temptation, a compulsion, we're talking about a compulsion. This is, I talk about this a little bit in my Do What Matters Most class. The problem is that it feels like you feel deprived a little bit if you don't do it. So you need something positive as an alternative. So I do think that it's and so that's so those are the two constructive things, right? Really get clear, and I would do this in hindsight, what is the negative and how can we mitigate that negative so that you're not as tempted? Second, have something that's positive but good for you as an alternative. And that's where, like, for example, like learning, for me, learning that thinking on paper often like clarifies a million things. That's something that can be a go-to for me. Going for a 3-minute walk can be a go-to for me. Listening to music can be a go-to alternative, which is pleasurable. And, so there are, I mean, this is something that's really worth brainstorming on what an alternative could be. And then the other thing that I would say that I think is helpful is, I find it's helpful to get annoyed with myself, right? Now, so this is a little bit using motivation by fear, but if you are totally convinced that something is not good for you, then it can be helpful to remind yourself of why it's not good for you and why you don't want this to be the way it is. And that, but you need to have something positive that you can go, you need to know the positive you're going after, that this is then another impulse for. So let me see if I can concretize that. So can you give me an example of a case where you would want to, where someone would be really clear they don't want to do X, and what, and they would be clear on what the alternative would be, but they're not, it's difficult to actually do that. Can you give me a just an example that you might work with?
So I think one key difference is that we're not necessarily looking for alternatives. I mean, yes, we want to add other things as well, but it's never like, if somebody finds safety in scrolling on TikTok or something, that one might be speaking for myself, but then it's something that what we're working on is more setting those limits so it's appropriate for right daily living. You can't do it for 10 hours of your day, 7 days a week, but it's setting those limits to where it is helpful to find those replacements. And I think the phone tends to be the biggest one. And my starting point usually is always building that awareness because it's not typically seen by my client at times as it is something that's impacting their goals and their tasks. So it's kind of it takes some time to really break that down. And each task we're like, all right, what could be different? What obstacles came up during this? And then they kind of getting them to the point of, oh wait, it might be like my phone.
Yeah, so that sounds completely, that sounds great to me. Building awareness is great. The one other thing I would say particularly if safety is the is the, so I actually don't put safety on my list of deep rational values. It's on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but it's not on my list of deep rational values. And part of the reason is I think that this is I'm big on setting ambitious goals, and I'll tell you, ambitious goals aren't safe. And part of what you want to do is you want to get excited about having something big and wonderful in your life and recognize, yeah, that's going to be scary, and that's okay. It's okay, and I can handle a little uneasiness and not knowing what to do, and I can handle a little scariness because this is what I'm going after. And there, I think it's very important. I mean, this is I haven't really concretized it, but if you have a really big goal, really important to bring it back so that you can actually get a payoff from whatever you're doing on it right now. I mean, I would say whatever task you're doing, a task is something that takes less than 2 hours. That needs to actually have a payoff where you say, wow, that's good. And you get some pleasure from it. And that, and even, like 10 minutes, right? You need to actually see, oh yeah, this is good. And so you're getting an actual payoff, even though you go through 10 minutes of, discomfort, or in some cases, 2 hours of discomfort. I think one of the things you do if you have ambitious goals is you increase the amount of discomfort you can handle for how long for a payoff, but you always have to have a payoff at the end. And I think the minimum is 10 minutes. Can you get over the hump? Yeah, you can be in this uncomfortable situation. You're going to try to get over the hump because then you think you're going to be on a roll and it's going to be great. And I think that's actually an important thing too, so that you don't feel that you have to have safety, that you actually are okay. I mean, we all want to have comfort at some time. Comfort is the thing that is on my list that would be comparable to this. You can't be out on the edge all the time, but recognizing, yeah, there is a place for me to be, challenging myself, I think is also, and that always needs to be a really selfish value. So I get them to dream bigger. Get them to think bigger about their goals. Because that's really,
Definitely.
that's the thing that gets people to say, okay, I better deal with this now. And I think the other thing I would say is you need a selfish goal. I really think this is important. To change your motivation, you need a really selfish goal that you are after, that you care about. And that prioritizes which things you need to work on. And it's not obvious what order to do them. You can, this is the thing I dislike about psychotherapy is it's kind of like taking inventory of all the problems you have. No, I don't agree with that. You don't need to solve all your problems. You just need to get out of your own way to start getting some momentum to achieve some goals. And so that's, I mean, you're a coach. I'm sure you're helping people achieve their goals.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much. That did definitely help provide a little more guidance and where I could focus on with some of those things. Thank you.
I'm really glad that was helpful, Sydney. Thanks for your question. Okay. Okay, Randy, we're up for you.
Cool. I'm wondering if you now would be a good time. You mentioned you had some thoughts for me about what we talked about last time. I think with dancing and friends, would this make sense to talk about now?
Yeah, let me actually find that note that I sent you.
If not, I have another question.
Yep. Okay. I have to say, I'm going a little bit blank about what exactly I was going to say at that time. Oh, well, actually, I'm just going to be open about this. So I was worried that I was the last time Randy and I spoke, which was in a coaching call a while ago. I was worried that I was not holding your context enough. And that I was trying to push you in a direction of a choice. And that I realized two things about that. So I'm just going to tell you about this, and you may not want to talk about this right now. I realized, so I wasn't staying connected to myself because when this is something from RCC, from Rationally Connected Conversations, it's really important that you don't have an agenda for how the conversation is going to come out. And I felt like I was trying to talk you into a conclusion, and that's not my overall intention, but that seemed to be what I was doing in that conversation. And I went back and thought about it and talked actually with my coach, and I realized that I was feeling frustrated that I wasn't helping you. And I think part of that is sometimes when we talk about, it was about your business. Sometimes when we talk about your business, we talk about it very abstractly, and I don't actually get down into the concretes. And I actually think that's where all the problem solving happens, is down in the concretes. And so that partly what happened is because I didn't want to go there because, you know, for various reasons, there's been some confidentiality issues. I didn't want to go there with you. I didn't want to push you on that. But as a result, I also didn't help you. So I think there's a communication issue here that I'm now more mindful of. And that was what came up. So this is a little bit abstract, but if you have another question, we can probably apply it directly to that question. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it does, my other question does relate to the business, and I think the two ideas I've been bouncing around for a while now, is basically like, what if you think your existing values are like not right? Like there's a sense that they're not right, but in I think that that's kind of like a common thing for me is like I, having decided like this is what makes sense to do, but then struggling to do it. Like I think for me specifically, like I've enjoyed in the past, like communicating ideas to people, like figuring out ideas, and then like, so that's like one interest I've had with for a business, and then there's the other idea of, like thinking, oh, it'd be really cool to like build this business. And it's like, of course, it's something I've never done before. So there's a sense in which I couldn't have that as a value.
Well, okay, and this is so just I want to be really transparent here. This is part of the problem, right? I don't know, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but
No,
this
we
is
could talk about it. Let's just talk about it.
right. This is very abstract, right? And I think there is an issue that communication is a big value of yours, and yet you don't like to talk about your actual business. Right. So I think that's a conflict right there. Now, the other thing I want to just clarify a value issue here. The one of the ways that you can develop a value is you actually create a goal, which is you imagine in your mind that you're going to create this business and you know, do this and do this and have this effect. And so you do have a your business is a value to you. You would have quit this business years ago if the business weren't a value to you.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that every second that you've put in working to try to create this business vision has reinforced that value. Now, it's not all consistent because you've also spent time fighting against it, right? And you've also, right, you've spent time not working on it when you thought you were supposed to. Is that an accurate way to put it? Right.
Yeah.
So part of the problem and the reason the business, one of the reasons the business hasn't completely taken off is the issue of consistent action. But I think also one of the issues is that you haven't had a consistent payoff, right? So in order, there's like 10 things that need to go, all need to happen. And part of why it's a thinking process is you need to figure out what the way forward is for this. And the action you take in the action you take right now needs to pay off, you know, in this task right now needs to pay off. And you need to actually get 2-week key results done where you actually see your major goals are moving forward. And that requires actually acting on them. And if you're really conflicted and you don't actually do the action over the 2 weeks, you can't get the 2-week goal. And you need to know why it is. And I mean, so part of my concern is you do have a big value of communication, and yet there's something funny about communicating about the business because you don't like to communicate specifically about the business that much. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think, yeah,
So you
with like,
definitely have conflicting values, Randy. So it's not that you have wrong values, but you definitely have conflicting values that need to be integrated in some way. Right? It's not that you're wrong. It's that they're conflicting. and the conflict has not been resolved, and it hasn't even been resolved at like a high level in my mind. Does that make sense? And it hasn't even been
Yeah.
analyzed at a low level. It's like, I don't know that you've really confronted the conflict you have over working on your business in it, which I think is, I really think is tied up in the communication issue. But I don't know because we haven't communicated about it. Okay, I talked too much. What did you want to say?
Now, yeah, well, part of it I think is like knowing how to talk about the subject of sex, which I think is like private. Yeah, I feel like even talking about it is like imposing on people.
Okay, so great. You said it so I can talk with you about it. I think this is something to learn to talk about. And I think, you could, I mean, I don't like, how do I say? So I've actually had conversations in coaching calls in the past with gay men about sex, not knowing anything about gay sex, right? Okay. And I told him, oh, I'm really nervous about this. But we talked about it. I actually helped some people on this issue just by being open and honest and just talking about it, right? Now, it was private in the sense that it was one-on-one, and I do think that that's easier. Do you talk about sex one-on-one with people in general?
I mean, in certain contexts,
Because
but
that's something that you could get good at, right? I mean, you could tell people this is an interest you want to actually be able to have a non-weird conversations about sex with people because that's what you want. I mean, let's name what your goal is there. I mean, I think you actually do want to be able to have the have productive conversations on this topic. Am I right?
yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
I think you'd like, from what you've told me, you'd like to actually be able to change the way people can talk about this. Right. Okay. So great. Well, this is a goal you could set, Randy, and you could work toward. And so, for example, you could come to the communication intensive and talk about sex at the communication intensive. I'm completely serious. This is something, we're all set up to be receptive and listen. We don't, no one has to share. Everyone here will know they don't have to share if they don't want to, right? And or that they could share how they're uncomfortable. People will be learning how to say that they're uncomfortable talking about this topic if they're uncomfortable. And that's part of what you need to be able to set a place where you initiate a conversation and you make it so safe. So I said safety is not on my list of deep rational values, but I think trust is. You want to set up such a trusting interaction that they can feel free to say, hey, Randy, I really don't want to talk about this. Or, hey, Randy, I mean, that's interesting, but this is kind of weird, or whatever it is. And that is a learnable skill. That's absolutely a learnable skill. Now, how that exactly translates into then, say, public marketing messages, I don't know. But I think if you actually worked at it one-on-one, you could figure out how to do public marketing messages. I think probably part of the problem is trying to do it all in one step, which sounds very hard to me. So, so here's something I think you really have. This is based on, I'm not, you don't learn your values by hearing what I say, but I want to give you some visibility for something I think is really true. I think you actually have some, original and important ideas about how people could talk about sex or talk about the other sex or the other per sex or whatever. And, this is something that I think one of the things that holds things in place is you really have a longing to figure out how to express that and you don't know how to express that. And you deserve, whether that is your business or whether that becomes a side of your business, that's a real, you get to honor that. And you get to figure out how to do that.
Yeah. That's true. That's very true.
And you see, this would help both, either of the two options you have, the communication option or the buildability option. Getting more comfortable where you can talk about it would help either of those two things. Because they may be compatible after all, who knows? Or it may, I mean, they're like one of the things that happens when you have a big, ambitious goal and you figure out what you can do in the short term that in fact meets your needs in the short term and moves you in the direction of them, is you then learn all kinds of new things. And when you get so you can talk with people about sex really easily and you can make it safe so people who would never thought they would talk about sex would talk about sex with you, which is what will happen. I guarantee if you develop a skill in this, that's what will happen. A whole new set of opportunities are going to arise, and you may decide that one of those is better than the ones that you see now.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think the key thing is it would be honoring this real longing you have to be able to talk about this. Because you've been shutting yourself down in various ways, I think. And that's painful.
That's helpful to understand and think about what would be a good context to practice this in, would be the next step.
Well, I mean, I don't want to sound like a broken record, and I am a little nervous about pushing, being too salesy, but I really do think the communication intensive would help. I really think it would really help. So, two slots left. Just saying. Okay. Okay, great. Okay, thank you, Randy. We're good for now?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay. All right. So, Ricardo. Hi.
So the question I have is, what are some things I can do to detect blind spots in my thinking and my strategy? So just to give you like a little bit of context, I just started my second startup a few weeks ago. And the first one wasn't successful because I was younger and I was learning everything. It was that first time founder, 100
So
mistakes.
it was or it wasn't successful. I didn't quite
It
hear.
wasn't. It wasn't.
Okay. All right. But you
But it
learned a
wasn't.
lot. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, so major improvement. And so part of what I'm trying to do now, I last week I resigned from my full-time job to focus on this full-time. And part of what I'm trying to understand is what are things that I don't know that I don't know? So I'll just give you like a quick example. Yesterday I had a call with someone who's like a mentor to me, like a business mentor. And he gave me like lots of suggestions and lots of like advice on what I could be doing differently or things I never considered. Like I didn't know, like I wasn't aware of. And they were like, great. So now there's like a whole new kit, like toolkit, let's say, of things that I can do that I can explore that will help what I'm doing, help me like verify that what I'm doing is actually a value to people, that there's a monetary transaction and so on. So do you understand what I mean by blind spot and so on?
Well, I do, although I think that it's probably not so great to think of them as blind spots. Let me just say like three things. Okay. So one is it's actually really important that you have mentors, probably more than one mentor, because now let me ask you, is this the business that you're starting, is this something that you have any experience in? And how radically new is it? Like, can you just give us an indication of what it is? Because that does make a difference.
Oh, sure. I have experience in the sense that we're building an app, and I've been involved in this kind of work for 7 years.
All right, so you know how to build apps, and the real issue is to build an app that's going to sell, is really that's what the challenge is. Is that right? Or not?
Yeah, it's to build an app that's shareable, let's say, because it's a personal utility type of app. I'm trying to, it's very early stage, so I'm still in the process of conceptualizing what it is. We are applying to Y Combinator next week. So with filling that application, like figuring out these details in the business. And so one way we think about the app is as a value tracker. So there are lots of like habit trackers out there. And so we're trying to do something that's like a value tracker. So there's some newness in that aspect, but yeah, the technology is not, yeah, it's not new. It's the perspective on what to actually track, let's say.
So it's not a technical problem so much as it is a conceptual of what it is you're trying to do and how are you going to actually make this work and make this a value to people. Am I right about that?
Yeah, the value to the person to the point where they are very excited about it and they share. Because the product that we have is very useful to me and like to the people who are using it already. But for it to be a successful startup, that's not enough. It has to be like a shareable product.
So, which I assume has some technical issues, but biggest thing is it's a value issue that the people need to see the value from it really easily and want to talk about it, right? Which is basically marketing. That's what marketing is, right? I mean, marketing is you make sure the product actually is so wonderful for the person that they can't live without it, right? So that is helpful for me. So one thing I would say is, of course, you take advantage of any experience of mentors and things, you know, they are going to tell you things that you don't know about. And you should have the view that these more experienced entrepreneurs know a lot. And I assume you're doing a lot of reading about that and you have, you know, blog, you know, podcasts you follow and things like that, right? There's a whole culture around how you start a business and you're involved in that. So that's the learning from others piece. And there's no substitute for that, particularly for something like this where it's you know, there is a lot known about this kind of thing. Now that part of your idea is completely original, right? It sounds like, you know, when you say it's a value tracker rather than a habit tracker, I'm guessing you're influenced by Ayn Rand. Is that right?
Yes, I teach objectivism. I'm an OAC graduate. I teach objectivism in the Ayn Rand Center, Latin America. So I teach both in Portuguese and Spanish.
Right. So there's a whole philosophy behind this, right?
Exactly, yes.
And part of what you need to be worried about for your blind spots is that you take that completely for granted. And so you're going to need to really concretize. Presumably, you're not trying to just get Ayn Rand fans to use this app. You're trying to get, and
Is that
so
right? Yeah.
who is the target audience who are not Ayn Rand fans? Do you have that named?
No, not yet. So it's very early in what we're doing. Right now, the people that I've onboarded to the product and who are using, they're mostly my students, or they know me as a reference, as a teacher of objectivism.
Right. So
So they
this
have
is
that reference. So they're all students of
an Ayn Rand.
objectivism.
Right. So this is something. So to have this get as big as you want it to be, I have the same thing with my thinking lab. Most of the people in the thinking lab are objectivists, but I want it to be scalable for anyone who is pro reason, which I think is much larger than objectivists. And so you need to figure out what that is, and that is going to require have you need to actually talk to a bunch of people who are not objectivists, and you need to. So one of the things I think is important that's been important for me, and that I think is probably going to be important for you, is you need to have a very benevolent view toward people who don't share your philosophy. And maybe you already have that, but not all objectivists do. A lot of objectivists have a little bit of a me versus them attitude, and that these joke, you know, it's like these jokers, they don't get it, and I got to straighten them out. And you definitely need to have a benevolent attitude of these people, look, these people are actually after these important rational values. And these people are actually, you know, trying to do this. And those are the people that I want to reach. And you have to have those in mind. Of course, in the entrepreneurial, I mean, there are a lot of people like that in the entrepreneurial community, right? So you actually, I'm sure you know a lot of people like that who are not objectivists just from the entrepreneurial community because they're very value oriented. And so that I'm not saying that that should be your niche, but you know, that's something to think about. So once you figure out who the wider audience is that you want to go after, that you think makes logical sense, you're going to need to really work on presenting the idea without assuming objectivism. And that means, in effect, reducing, you basically need to reduce whatever it is to things where I don't know how to explain this in, I'm doing this myself. I don't know how to explain it in two sentences, but you basically need to re-figure out how you can present this such as they don't have those assumptions. And you need to really go through the list of things that you expect them to have. You expect them to be somewhat skeptical. You expect them to have reason, emotion, that they think reason and emotion are in conflict. You need to expect all of these philosophical errors that are rampant in the culture. You need to actually expect and think, how am I going to reach this audience given they probably have this mistake? So I can't just say, go by reason, which is the thing I realized. I couldn't just say that because people totally misunderstand that to think it means ignore your emotions. So that's one thing. So you can actually use all the philosophical errors to help you figure that out. I'm going to make one more plug for the Thinking Lab. There is a nonfiction writing class in the Thinking Lab, which is a very good writing class, if I have to say. And one of the things it has is the audience's context. And this is on the list of things that you need to figure out for the audience's context. So that's one thing I would say. The other kind of unknowns, unknowns that I think you need to really accept the reality that you know what you know and you don't know what you don't know, right? So this is a real thing. And the most important thing you can do to make sure you are taking advantage of every possible lead you could do is make sure you are great at introspecting your emotions. Because any little tingly thing at the side you have, you want to be able to introspect that and figure out where is that coming from. Because if you don't have, you've got to completely let go of if you have no indicator that you should worry about this. But like as I'm saying, like philosophical fallacies, you know a list of philosophical fallacies. And if one of them tingles up on the side, my God, you got to go check that out. And that will not necessarily show up. It will show up front and center now because I mentioned it. But if you hadn't talked to me about that particular issue, it would have come up on the side like reason emotion dichotomy. Oh, but it would be so faint and emotional, perhaps, that unless you went and said, yeah, there's something niggling at me. What is that? You wouldn't get it. But if you do go and look at what's niggling at you, you can then say, oh, reason emotion dichotomy. Gee, how am I going to handle that? Okay, I better think about that. And it's not that you have the answer, but at least if it's something that is the thing you'll kick yourself about is if you think, gee, I could have thought of that. And the way that you avoid, gee, I could have thought of that, is by listening to all of those very faint emotions at the side. And for that, I think the most important thing you need is you need actually quite a bit of thinking time at your desk doing thinking on paper of some kind. Do you have a process where you do, strategic thinking as thinking on paper at your desk, I don't know, an hour or two a day?
I don't do thinking on paper. I do thinking like on the computer.
Oh, that's fine.
So
Yeah,
I'll.
I'm typing it out in full sentences without editing.
So I don't do. I write a lot on my notepad. So I just use like the basic notepad from the computer
Yeah,
and
that's
any
fine.
or even PowerPoint. So whenever I'm trying to figure something out, I will do a lot of typing, a lot of writing. But I'm not sure it qualifies as thinking on paper.
Well, you should definitely get the Thinking Direction Starter Kit that includes. Well, maybe you should buy. Actually, what you should buy is the Thinker's Toolkit. It's $20 for the PDF. It's very cheap. And it's got three articles on thinking on paper. And the critical reason why you need thinking on paper is it's systematic. It's not just making notes and it's not just clarifying your language. Because a lot of times when people just make notes, they either make them as phrases, which is not as good as full sentences, or they're trying to say something and they kind of edit it as they go. And what true thinking on paper is really grappling with a problem where every sentence you move forward. And like, I mean, I just was doing it this morning on a very similar problem to what you're talking about. I'm like, gee, I don't know quite what is going on here. And something is off with this. It's like it's too top down, or it's not top down enough. It's too bottom up. It's going to turn into a hydra. So what is it? And I just groped around paragraph by paragraph, and had to take a couple 3 minute walks to clear my head and come back, and actually did figure out something. But there's a real, when you're doing something really new, which it sounds like you are, you need to have a structured way to listen to what's coming up from your subconscious, and you need a structured way to be able to take that concern that comes up and kind of tackle it and make at least a little bit of progress on it, so you can hold on to it and think about it later, or talk to your mentor about it later. Because otherwise what happens is it flits by, and if you don't chew it enough till it has a little bit of form, or you have just some idea even what the problem is, it doesn't come back.
Right.
And
That is something I have been noticing in the last few weeks, because I've been working in a job that is very, very easy. It required like less than 25% of my skill set and like brain power. And that's one of the reasons why I quit, because I was making a good amount of money, but I wasn't being productive. And so working in the startup again and going back to almost like a shift in mindset and productivity, and like the thing doesn't move forward unless I do something or if one of my co-founders does something. I get to these moments where I'll start thinking about a situation in the future. So let's say we want to launch. That's one of the things we want to do, like as soon as possible. So we want to launch. So we need a few things related to that, like a company, like formally a company, a subscription platform, and so on. So these are details that there's like a bureaucracy involved with it. And what I've been noticing is, once I identify these issues that I know will come up a few weeks in the future, it's almost like my first reaction is like doom. It's like, oh no, how am I going to deal with that? Like, I don't know anything about that in a way, even though I might know something about it. And so when I actually like, if I go to the gym and I work out for like 45 minutes and then I'm thinking about it, as soon as I come out of the gym, like I have an answer, or I have like a solution, or the beginning of a solution.
So let me just tell you, thinking on paper expedites that. 3 minutes of thinking on paper can save a trip to the gym. Just saying. This is why, if you could do it while you were working out, it means that you just needed to kind of percolate a little bit and pull it around. And that's something you can do intentionally. You can really accelerate. So I strongly recommend that. The other thing I'd say is very important. I thought you were going to say something completely different, Ricardo. I thought you were going to say, these thoughts were distracting me from what I knew I needed to do now, which can also happen, right? You start thinking about the future and you say, oh, well, there's that, and that. And those become like the bright, shiny things that you want to think about. But you
Right.
actually need to do, like, you got to get this Y Combinator thing done. And thinking about how you're going to launch is really a mistake right now because you've got a deadline in 2 days. And
Was a problem 5 years ago, but yeah.
you can do that,
Okay.
right? Okay. But what I was going to say is very important to have. What's come up several times here is have goals with payoffs. The way I teach goal setting, you have the vision, right? You've got the vision thing. I definitely hear you've got the vision. You need to bring that back to, I guess Y Combinator is like a 3 month. How long is the Y Combinator process?
It's 3 months, yeah, if accepted, yeah.
3 months, right? So if you're accepted, so you need a 3 month goal for that, but you also need. You need to bring that back down to a 2 week goal. Every 2 weeks, you need to see material progress forward. That's not a trivial thing. That's a creative problem-solving process to figure out how you could actually see that and then bring that back down to tasks. But that also is a learnable skill. So
Yeah.
go for it. That's what I have to say. But that's the
Yeah,
big
but that's definitely. Yeah, that's definitely one of the things, one of these things that I would say in the past was a blind spot of sorts, or I didn't know, like even the pace that things should move. When we started this, we began writing 2 week goals. And in part because 3 years ago, I learned this from Y Combinator, just their free material, that that is what the clock should be, the time expectation should be. If every 2 weeks you're not making like a good amount of progress, there's something off with operations.
Right. Well, and figuring out how to set those goals is not a trivial thing. Also available in the Thinking Lab at popular prices. So, okay. So go get them. Go get them, Ricardo. Okay. Now, I think we had someone else who had his hand up, but I think he may have left. And And now, David, I think you're coming back for more. So do you have a quick one? Because that you're the same David, right?
Yes, and I don't think it's quick.
Okay, well, tell me what it is and I will give a quick answer. How about that?
Sure, sounds good to me. So I struggle when it comes to, I guess you could say, prioritizing productive goals. So first of all, I do have the competing goal. Like I want to improve at that as my central purpose, but I have other goals
What at
that
your purpose? What's your central purpose?
I want to play this particular video game at a competitive and high level.
Okay, that can't be a central purpose, but carry
I
on.
know. I know. I
It can't
know.
be, that's not that. So part of the problem that you can't prioritize is you don't have a clear central purpose. Just saying. Okay, carry on.
Okay. All right. Thank you. However, there are other things I want to do, for example, like study a foreign language and continue working on a video restoration project. But I don't have the motivation to do them in the sense that I feel like if I dedicate my time to those things, then I am not dedicating my time to clarifying a central purpose, for example.
Well, okay. So I'm just going to give you there's a whole series of blog posts on central purpose. And in the Thinking Lab, there's a whole class on central purpose. So, the critical thing is you do need some actual creative goal and where you're actually creating something in the world, which is not achieved by playing a game. Sorry. Okay. Now, creating a game, that'll be fine. But or creating this app, like Ricardo was talking about, that's actually creating something in the world. Now, and if you have an intellectual goal, it means some kind of communication in the world. If you do not have that you need that, this is a philosophical issue. Productive work, which means actually creating material values in the world, is a necessity of happiness. You need to have something where you are actually creating things in the world, and you need to figure out what that is. Now, it could be 10 hours a week. You know, some people have day jobs, some people are retired. It does not have to be a 60-hour a week thing. It does not have to be a 40-hour thing, but it does need to be something like 10 hours a week, and it needs to be something where you, in effect, your creative genius is being unleashed on the world and creating something in the world that is necessary for happiness. And if you do not have, and when you have that, it has a lot of collateral effects, which are also why it's necessary for happiness. And one of it is that becomes the big rock you put in first, and everything needs to fit around it. And that is the thing that then gives you a standard, that plus health. Give you the standards by which you can prioritize everything else. And unless you have that central purpose, you're floating, you do not have any objective way to prioritize. So that is the problem, David. That is absolutely the problem. And I would strongly recommend you do the work and figure out what your actual creative central purpose is. It probably has some relationship to this game you're so fond of. There's probably something about this game that, you know, is quite exciting to you, and that you could turn it somehow into a central purpose. I mean, I don't know if it would be a business related to it, or it's some, you'd basically use those skills in some other area. I don't know what it is. But there's probably a reason why that particular game appeals to you so much. But a game per se, it just doesn't. It's not a productive undertaking, and that, yeah. And so it
I was
won't
going to
work.
say, oh, go
Yeah,
ahead, yeah.
yeah. So it just won't. It won't serve the psychological purpose that a psychological role that you need, and that will be totally mess up your priorities, guaranteed.
Okay, so I will just say briefly that I did read those articles, I listened to the classes, and I even tried articulating a central purpose, and I didn't have too much success with that. So just a brief question. What might be an example of someone like a Simone Biles or other athlete that competes at a high level? Like maybe at tennis or some sport.
I mean, I don't, so I'm going to just, I don't know very many athletes, but let's take Roger Federer, who's like the only athlete I know anything about. I don't know what his actual central purpose was, but just judging by his behavior, It was something like figure out the limits of the human body for performing at the top level as old as possible, right? I mean, that's what's amazing about him, right? I mean, the thing he did is he figured out how to keep his body at really an extraordinary age for a high level tennis player, still be able to perform at that level. And, my understanding is he put a hell of a lot of thought into that. And that's something he had to figure out and do. And the evidence of it was the performance, but the actual thing he actually created knowledge about how do you maintain your body and your skills and develop skills to be able to do this. So it's a, in effect an intellectual goal there. It's a real thing. I
Okay.
mean, he advanced the knowledge, for old athletes. I'm sure, Brady also, I know someone who's related to his trainer. I mean, this is a guy who put a tremendous amount of thought into how does he actually perform at that level till that age. That's, I don't know what their central purposes are now. They've both retired, but that takes a hell of a lot of creative thinking and productive work and, concentrated attention. And that's
Okay.
the thing they actually created. And the winning of the games was evidence that they had succeeded, but you see that the actual body of creation was not the winning of the games. Does that make sense?
Okay, I see. He like his contribution to the world is the knowledge that he brought into it on this subject.
Yes, right.
Okay. All right, I think that gives me a really good direction to go with.
Great. Great. I'm delighted to hear that. And I just want to say one thing. I don't think it necessarily has to be a contribution quote to the world. I think that sometimes it is helpful to think, how do I want to make the world a better place? Because I think that is helpful. But I think thinking in terms of you're actually creating something that didn't exist before, that is very helpful. And even if it's like so anyway, that's what I think is actually needed for a central purpose. Okay.
Okay, now I mean, that's very interesting because listening to your class when you said, I forget the exact wording, but it was like something about what you need to do. You need to believe it makes the world better in some way. And then you went on an explanation how that's like not an altruistic premise. I was like, oh
Yeah.
snap, this is what I've been like missing. And then your
It's not
clarification
out.
here that it's like, yeah, but like your clarification here, that's more about creating something rather than trying to, whatever was it I said to make the world a better. I
Contribute to the
forget what I
world.
just said. Yeah, contribute
Contribute
to
to the
the
world.
world.
Right. And but that is, I mean, that does take creative work, right? So that's one way to get at it, but I think it is a little bit of a social way to get at it. And so I think the more general
Okay.
way is that you're creating something new, right? Okay.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you, Gene.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks for your questions. Okay. Well, this is good because I actually do have a hard stop at 2, which we almost came up to, but I have answered all the hand-raised questions and I'm going to call it quits here. I promoted Thinking Lab, I promoted Launch, which starts September 2nd, and I promoted the 4-day communication intensive. Price goes up September 1st. So those last two slots, we're hoping to sell them by the end of August. So maybe one of those will be something some of you would like to enroll in. In any case, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for asking me anything, and I enjoyed answering your questions. I will sign off for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jean.